Nerds Amalgamated, a podcast that covers the latest events in science, pop culture, and gaming.
I'm the professor, aspiring game developer, sci-fi aficionado, and completely and undeniably a geek trying to take over the world. I'll be breaking down the news from tech to gaming.
I am the DJ, a humble nerd, a big weeb, and a watcher from the halls of the multiverse. Just kidding. Anyways, I'll be breaking down all things comics to movies to anime.
Join us and stay hydrated as we quench you with witty banter, unintentionally hilarious hot takes, and trivia more fun than a night at the pub, courtesy of Nerds Amalgamated.
Welcome to another episode of Nerds Amalgamated. I am the DJ, and with me today I have the Professor.
Hello.
And BPM is back.
Yo. I'm a bit tired.
How have you all been?
Oh, you know.
I regret bragging about my air conditioner.
Did it break?
What?
It broke.
Hey, BPM, we're having the last laugh right now.
Yeah. Fans for the win.
Yeah. You've had the last 2 months to get used to the temperature. I haven't.
Yep. Welcome. You're now one of us. One of us. One of us. One of us. So what's been new, guys? What's been new, fellas?
Nothing really. Just chilling day. Mm. Nothing work. The usual. Mm.
How are you, Professor?
I just told you what's new with me.
The AC broke.
besides the AC being broken?
Well, I've heard people say that there's a shortage of trades at the moment. I didn't realize how bad it was until I tried to get an electrician to come take a look at it.
Oh, no.
Some of them are booked out for more than 6 weeks.
Oh.
Oof.
And you better have
fans and windows.
And you better have a big deep pocket right there when you get that air conditioner repaired.
The repair bill is going to be high.
Oh yeah, yes. The inflation has gone nuts. So for our episode today, we'll be talking about Apple's malicious compliance. Don't be so pig-brained, and Christopher Nolan's love of big movies.
He does like his big movies.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. So, anyways, let's start with the Professor on Apple's recent malicious works. Take it away.
Well, you're probably familiar with the Apple versus Epic story.
Yeah.
I think we've covered it a few times before.
Several times.
Yep.
Well, finally, it was handed down that Apple would have to allow alternative app stores in the EU. And they've gone and allowed that, except they've got some of the most horrible rules I've seen for an alternative app store. In the US, they're taking a 27% commission on all transactions through alternative app stores. So they're not even facilitating the payment there, and they're charging a commission on it.
Ow. That sounds like Apple.
Yeah.
In the EU, they're taking a commission of up to 17%.
Oh, that's not bad.
Not as bad.
Yeah, I mean, okay, yeah.
But the bit that really stings is the core technology fee. Do you remember a couple of months ago, Unity said that they were going to start charging for every install of a game?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And how that went absolutely terribly for them?
Yeah.
Didn't it cost like a CEO's job at the time as well?
Yeah, they overthrew the CEO and rolled back all of those changes. I'm not sure where it's at the moment, but at the time it was not going very well for Unity.
Yeah, last I remember for Unity, they had like a couple of job layoffs or something around those lines after, as soon as that happened. That's the last I've heard, but...
Yeah, everyone's been laying off at the moment, so it's hard to use that as a metric.
Mm-hmm.
But this core technology fee is going to be Apple charging 50 euro cents for each install per year after the first million.
Mm-hmm.
Regardless of whether the app is distributed through Apple or an alternative marketplace. And I wouldn't normally agree with Tim Sweeney, the founder of Epic, but he's called this a devious instance of malicious compliance, and I have to agree with him for once.
Sounds like. But to agree with someone else who does the same thing, that's interesting.
I just don't know where Apple gets off on this, because they already charge you to release an app on the App Store.
Mm-hmm.
Previously, the rule was you had to buy a Mac, buy the IDE, I think it's Xcode on Mac, buy a yearly license to release apps on the App Store, and then pay a commission of however much it is they charge for every sale you make through the store. So that's four levels. Now they're adding a core technology fee, so that's five levels. You've got to pay five separate transactions to Apple to release an app now.
So this is essentially, you're basically blackmailing the developers of the apps to go, hey, not blackmail, extorting them, essentially.
Yeah, I've always thought it's a bit extortionate that to release an app on iOS, you need to be that deep into the Apple ecosystem.
So, are there any measures they're going to do to combat this sort of practice, or are they going to let it slide, essentially?
We'll have to see what the EU does now. Hopefully Tim Sweeney is saying, sorry,
hopefully BPM. Hopefully complain.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, but the complaining won't do much. I mean, you try and complain it to the law group, and the law group will go, nah, we can't do much about this. We'll have to talk to the government. And then you go to the government, you complain to them, the government will go, yeah, we'll investigate this, and it would just go stale.
Yeah. That's one of the old governments anyway.
Yeah.
Mostly anyway.
It's a good start, though, that they're forcing Apple to open up. I think I haven't read the laws, and I'm not a lawyer, but I think that they're going to be investigating this because it really doesn't seem to fit the spirit of the law for them to continue to charge you to release an app on a alternative app store that Apple doesn't actually own.
It is kind of like, why? What's wrong with the Google store? Like, seriously.
Yeah. The Android store would the Android store be the same? Would have the same problems as well, or
no? Because on an Android, you can install alternative stores.
Mm-hmm.
The most popular are probably Amazon store. Amazon have their own app store for their Fire tablets.
Oh, yeah?
And F-Droid, which is for open source software.
What's Android's pricing model, if you don't mind me asking there, Professor? Is it the same or different?
I don't know what commission Google takes on purchases, but I believe you can release a free app through the Google App Store for free, basically. You don't need to own a Google computer. You don't need to use a specific Google IDE. You don't need to pay a Google licensing fee.
Hmm.
And my phone has heard me saying Google so many times, it's now decided to pull up the Google Assistant. Google. It can't do that when I want it to. So I'm really sorry if anyone's listening to this on speakers.
That's all right.
He's like, Alexa, bring up Google Maps.
That's exactly what we're trying not to do, DJ.
I could always ask Siri to be nice.
That reminds me of a video from, must be a decade ago now, where someone had created an infinite loop of all of the assistants saying, hey you, hey you, hey you. And it would just go around the circle of devices.
I see one video talking about doing an infinite loop with Siri, Alexa, and Google Home.
That might be the one.
Oh boy. But okay, so that being said, how do you reckon with Apple doing this level of maliciousness, you reckon this will put into task the other phone companies doing this level of maliciousness, like saying like, hey, Apple's doing this level of maliciousness and they're getting caught for this. We should stop doing our version and whatnot.
So it looks like I've actually just found the details for the Google App Store.
Yep.
And it looks like they charge 15%.
Oh.
30% if you earn in excess of $1 million a year.
Yeah, of course they want to cut.
I mean, that kind of makes sense. I mean, that's also reasonable as well. Like at least it doesn't cut the developers on their knees. Like if their app is not struggling, unlike Apple.
Yeah, you've got to pay all that to Apple, even if you just want to release a free app.
Yeah,
but that speaks. But then you just lose more money.
But the not only do you lose a lot of money, you also lose that customer base as well, because if I recall, there are a lot more Apple users than Android users.
No. Only in the US.
Okay.
Around the world, there is more Android than Apple.
Okay.
It's only in the US that people really buy into Apple for some reason. And it's more like 50-50 there, I think.
What's your bet on this what the government will do next? If you were the government, what would you do?
Buy in.
Well, I think the spirit of the law would be to not have Apple charge for alternative app stores.
Mm-hmm.
Because at that point, what is Apple really doing? They're providing the hardware, but in no other scenario are we expected to pay for hardware beyond the initial cost. We're not, like, if you're on your computer, you don't pay Microsoft every time you install a game on Steam.
That's true. That's true. Yeah.
So Apple is the only one who really does that at the moment. And I think that is just sort of spitting in the face of the spirit of the law there. So I think if I was the EU, I would be making it very clear to Apple that they need to behave.
But then Apple, knowing Apple, they'll try and divert that to any other market. Like they might go to Asia and do the same level of malicious compliance and.
Yeah, well, they're doing it right now. They're charging different amounts depending on whether you're in the EU or the US.
Hmm.
Because the laws don't exist in the US at this point.
Yeah.
Or laws that they think is the smart type of laws, you know, I don't know. Yeah. America is America. Like every other country, they have their ups and downs. One of their downs, in my personal opinion, is their politics and healthcare.
Yep. Yeah. So wait and see for now.
I think so.
Wait and see what happens. It's the best we can do.
Fair enough, fair enough. All right. Anyways, so we should go to our next topic. So you've chose this, Professor, as a and that's a very interesting topic about pigs' brains.
And man-made horrors beyond my comprehension.
I heard about this. That they've been keeping things alive after they've been removed or something like that.
Oh, yeah. So,
yep.
It was this story is basically researchers at the University of Southwestern Medical Center have created a procedure and device capable of separating the brain from the rest of the body and keeping it alive for hours at a stretch. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
And they say this is good because it's a better way to scan the brain and work out what's going on inside the brain when it's not attached to the rest of the body.
Yeah. I'm starting to feel a bit queasy here.
Yeah.
What creeps me out about it is that the brain activity doesn't slow down or anything.
Yeah, it's creepy and cool, the same thing, in my opinion.
Yeah, so you've got a brain which is not attached to a body. What is it feeling? What are the experiences that it's having?
Maybe it's figuring out what the hell's going on. I have no idea, you know, type of thing.
Oh, man. Why am I thinking, my mental image right now, I'm thinking of that episode in Red Dwarf when Dave Lister's brain is in a jar.
Yeah, this is basically a brain in a jar.
Aww.
And it's not hooked up to any sensors, so.
That's creepy as hell.
I can't imagine that being a very comfortable position to be in.
No, it wouldn't be.
Nope.
We can't really know that until we have either a perfect brain scan or we plug the brain into another body and see if it comes back to life.
Bring on the future armor of heads in the jar.
Oh.
At least those heads have sensors. They can't do anything, but they're still able to think and see. They're not trapped in their own brains.
Mm-hmm.
Although, mind you, the whole idea of separating the head, reminds me of a pilot experiment years ago in Italy where some scientists wanted to transplant. I wanted to cut off the head and see how it would go if it transplanted to another body.
There's been a couple of people who have talked about that, and there's one scientist who keeps announcing every couple of years that he's going to do it.
He ever does it?
No. He hasn't been allowed to so far.
Yeah, it makes sense.
I don't think the science is at a point where he could do that yet. Like, you can keep it alive for a few hours away from a body, but can you hook it back up to the body? First, you would want to hook it back up to its own body and see what happens. And then you'd need to experiment with hooking a brain up to another body, which would be a whole nother level of difficult.
Oh, yeah, that's going to, like, sci-fi territory, in my opinion.
Okay. Yeah. Fellas, I was trying to find out any outcome from that head transplant experiment. So apparently it was successful, scientists have said. And
okay.
So the next step, said Sergio Canavera, is a head transplant between two brain-dead organ donors. And he said
how was it successful?
That's the thing, yeah. How was it successful? How long did that last?
I've just Googled it myself, and the first thing to come up is an article performed on a corpse. Yeah, so, that's the same article that you're reading.
Yeah.
Bring on the necromancers.
Oh, let's not do the necromancer stuff. Oy vey. I can imagine all the religious people just going like, no, you cannot do this. This is a crime against humanity and perverting nature and whatnot.
And science doesn't do that in general?
So, yeah, this article you're looking at is from 2017.
Yeah.
It's the same guy I recognize as the Dr. Sergio Canavari, who I recognize as the scientist who wants to, well, the neurosurgeon who wants to do a transplant. But it's on corpses, which is a completely different thing than doing it on a live person.
It is.
But back to the pig head. The pig's head. So where did the pig's head come into this?
Well, pigs are quite similar to humans anatomically. So if you take a pig and can perform an operation on a pig, it functions as a close analog to doing it on a human.
Yeah, because pigs ironically this very build up the same as human beings, which is interesting. They have like the lungs, the kidneys, and all that type of stuff in the same place, more or less.
So they actually used to use and might still use pig parts for some organ transplants.
Yeah, I remember we spoke about this years ago. They tried to do a pig kidney or something, or pig's heart, if I recall, or pig kidney.
Yeah, so they're probably practicing this on pigs because it's a close analog to a human body. So
yeah,
when they do get around to doing the same experiment on people, they'll see what the effects might be.
Mm-hmm. But given this though, can you imagine the ethical implications that's going to come around doing this? Imagine if this becomes a very viable option with the ethics involved in this.
Yeah, if the brain is under any sort of suffering while it's detached from a body, I can't see this passing ethics. Although, maybe it is, but hooking it up to another body could be successful, in which case you could, yeah, potentially do a head transplant. But I think the science is a long way to go before that's possible.
Yeah.
And you have, there. And not to mention, there's also the psychological damage you have to go through as well. Like, can you imagine being the one telling your dead relative, hey, you're dead, but we managed to bring you back to life using a very, very interesting scientific technique, and you're not going to like it.
Yeah. But I'm pro-science, so, you know, I'm all for changing it all up.
Yeah, but what price, though? I mean, like, it's like I said, it's like, can you imagine telling it to your family that the grisly discovery that, oh, we use some bits of your relatives to build you?
I wouldn't have a problem with that. That's what they do with like kidney transplants already.
Oh yep. Yeah.
And heart transplants, lung transplants.
I mean, I get that, but the head transplant, that's
It's odd, but at the same time, it's an interesting advancement to head towards, you know, Frankenstein monsters.
Yeah, I think it can be bypassed if you market it well.
This is true, but then marketing—it's a good marketing that can do it done with anything.
Yeah,
look at all the AAA gamers that they marketing and then they buy it, then market, they do good at marketing and selling, but their game creation is poor.
Yeah. And also the other implication, the other problem you have to deal with is imagine the government getting into this. Like, how would you legislate this as well?
And then you got the human rights and
yep.
And what's the thing? Consent to die when they want. I think that's the thing that's getting tossed up through.
That's an angle I hadn't thought about. Kept alive indefinitely.
Which could be bad.
The DNRs. Oh, can you
imagine? You're sentenced to 300 years in prison, and we're going to make sure you get.
Oh, that's going a darker path than I was going. But yeah, that's the thing. That could become a capital punishment, which is the shit as hell. Especially if they're really cruel, like, we got to keep killing you and keep reviving you until you beg for us to die. That's just bleh. That's just human rights out the window right there and there.
We've just turned from like nerdy podcasters to advisors to future dictators in a matter of minutes.
Because I'm in the group, that's why.
Hey, job pays well enough.
Especially when you steal it from the serfs.
And what's going to be even worse is, can you imagine pharmaceutical companies doing pharmaceutical and private medical organizations having a wind of this? Like, let's say, for example, you go through the government assistance package of, okay, we'll do the head transplant on our government plan. It's free, but you will get a little bit of kinks and whatnot in the transplant. But if you sign up for our special health coverage program, you will get a perfect head transplant with no problems whatsoever. At the low, low price of $1.5 million.
Well, we already have that. Like, there are people who choose to go without anesthetic during operations because it costs them extra money to get it done for minor stuff like having your teeth out.
Yeah.
Even in Australia, I've actually went to the dentist recently and I've got to get my wisdom teeth out. And he gave me a document with the cost of that. And then it's like at the bottom, it's like, yeah, you can have anesthetic for an extra $100.
Oh.
It's like, yeah, I hope my health insurance covers that.
Do you get reimbursed for it though, or?
It depends.
That's another thing. Like, can you get reimbursed for an operation like this?
Well, eventually I would think that it would work like a organ transplant of any other kind.
Mm-hmm. That's the goal, I'm assuming, that they're going for.
And there is one more other question I think I forgot to mention as well, is you're going to have to also consider the age of the people that are donating the organs. Like, can you imagine a head transplant of a dementia patient? Like, ooh.
Well, that couldn't be. That wouldn't work because the dementia is a problem with the disintegration of the human brain. So if the brain's still in the skull, it's got to not change anything. Ain't Dr. Stone.
And the other question I think we've also forgot to mention is, will the consciousness be the same or will it be different?
Well, that's getting quite philosophical.
Yeah.
Is your consciousness in your brain, or is it some emergent property?
Or is the whole thing part of the human soul? There's another thing you can go into it.
Yeah.
I personally think most likely your brain is going to be the source of like 90% of your emotions. But we are seeing things like the gut-brain interface having an effect on mood.
Yeah.
Like, a study I saw about a year ago was suggesting that small doses of loperamide, a diarrhea medication, could be a treatment for autism.
Yeah.
So, yeah, that does raise the question, if you did a head transplant, would the body, the new person, be exactly the same as the old person? Or would the new body parts influence the brain?
By the way, I'm reading through the article about the pigs as well. They said the methodology here is saying that they separated the blood flow to the pig's brain from the rest of the body, switched it all over to an EPCC device. Once hooked up, the machine uses software to monitor and maintain blood flow and blood pressure for a span of 5 hours or more. Researchers cut off the experiment after five hours, but the data suggests they could have gone longer. Meanwhile, researchers use implanted electrodes to record brain activity. In addition to direct visual observation, they found that the brain activity remained largely unaltered as compared to ordinary conditions. I reckon the reason why it's happened is because it's like when you're in the middle of a gunfight, for example, like a gun battle, and you get shot, but you don't realize it until after the adrenaline.
So you think if they'd kept it going longer, then the brain would have realized something's wrong?
Yeah, later on. Yeah.
Possibly. Something, another really dark way this could go, though.
Oh.
Here we go.
Plugging a brain in a jar into a simulation designed to cause suffering.
Matrix.
Oh, Jesus.
Matrix hell. Jesus.
Yeah, whether that's like just zapping the pain nerves forever.
Yeah.
Or creating a computerized simulation of some sort. You know, it's every day you're going to school to be bullied sort of thing by eternal, infinite simulations of the perfect bully.
I think, Professor, I think you missed your calling in life to be the you missed your calling to be like this, like scientist, torturer and scientist.
Hey, you're all lucky I didn't choose to go into science.
Yeah, well, at least these guys are not as crazy as Christopher Nolan with his movies.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Bad segue, but okay.
Nolan talks about working with large scale movies. So from a Variety article, so Nolan's a big fan of movies that are smaller scale dramas like After Sun and Past Lives, compared to his own output. So he was recently talking about Time magazine article, about Oppenheimer, and he basically said this: I'm drawn to working at large scale because I know how fragile the opportunity to marshal these resources is. Nolan told the production about sticking to big productions. I know that there are so many filmmakers out there in the world that would give their eye teeth to have the resources I put together, and I feel I have the responsibility to use them in the most productive an interesting way. But when I read the Time magazine article in itself, it's all it was basically talking about, it was his journey to how he got the Oppenheimer movie to fruition. So, for example, he wrote the screenplay, the stage direction and screenplay as not Oppenheimer enters the room, but I enter the room to help Cillian Murphy, for example. And he also talks about bits and pieces, how he got the process to get done and dusted, essentially.
Yeah.
Like, for example, they want to add in a scene for where Oppenheimer puts potassium cyanide in an apple at the desk at the professor's desk, but they decided not to because it was just too controversial at the time. But it was a true story, apparently.
We all know the best part of Oppenheimer is when Oppenheimer says, "I'm Oppenheimer," and Oppenheimer's all over the room. But I think that's an interesting point, that he says that he has to do the big movies because he has the resources to do them.
Yeah.
And that he doesn't feel like he can make smaller movies.
What's interesting about that is when speaking to other people that were involved in the Oppenheimer film, for example, there was another person, Ruth DeJong. She worked in the as a production designer, and they revealed that Nolan slashed around 30 filming days in order to relocate the film's budget to production design and set locations. And she went on to say, she said this last year, "It felt like $100 million indie. This is not Tenet. Chris wanted to shoot all over the United States. Just plane tickets alone and putting crew up all over the place is expensive. Not to mention I have to build Los Alamos. It did not exist. That's why I really felt like it was impossible." Chris said, "Forget the money. Let's just design what we want." So that's what we did. And when construction first budgeted my town, it was $20 million. Chris was like, "Yeah, no, stop."
Sounds like he regretted giving them a blank check.
I mean, to put it in the perspective, though, like, putting a lot of money into making a very big movie is a very big sacrifice.
Yeah, that money could go to 100 smaller movies.
Yeah. Yeah. And the interesting part with the thing with smaller movies is at least they're more creative, and that's what Nolan's movies are also as well. They're very creative. Although sometimes some of the creative movies leave you head scratching, like Tenet and Inception.
Mm-hmm. Oh, Inception was an interesting one. I'm not gonna lie, I enjoyed that film.
It was interesting, but it just, like I said, there was a lot of creativity to it, but there were some moments you just wanna, like, what the hell is this guy talking about? But it's interesting looking into the production process. It's when you look at this level of craft, you got to praise Nolan's dedication to the craft. When you look at, like, I mean, comparing it to, like, the recent movies that we've been seeing lately, like the MCU movies, for example, and how milquetoast they've become.
Mm. Well, I think that also falls into a certain trap that a movie that's cost you $1 billion has to make $1 billion back to be profitable.
Oh, it's not only $1 billion. Not only $1 billion back, it would be like $1.5 billion because, not to mention the marketing.
The point is, though, that a movie has to make a profit. And the bigger movies have to appeal to a bigger audience to make that profit. So they tend to trend towards the median experience that people were looking for.
It's an interesting predicament. But, like, I don't know, when it comes to movies, I don't know anything about them. I just watch them.
I'm continuing reading the Variety article, by the way. It's The Ruth DeJong also said that the filmmaker told her, I've got to do my homework, which she realized meant reorganizing the film's shooting schedule in order to consolidate days and free up the budget for the production design. DeJong said Oppenheimer was originally set for an 85-day shoot, perhaps even more, but Nolan cut it down to at least 30 days.
Woo!
That's impressive. That is very impressive for Nolan to do this level of work, and especially with a budget of $100 million. That's incredible. Like, when you look at the Marvel movies, for example, how much budget they put into it, like over $250 million. Last I remembered,
something like that. I can't remember. I wasn't really paying much attention to it. As I said, I just watch movies and complain about how bad they were written or whatever.
So, given those though, you reckon we're going to see a precedent of people abandoning the high cost movies and try and minimize the cost to make a better movie with a lower budget level, or you reckon they'll you reckon they'll be pigheaded enough to go, yeah, we're gonna keep doing this.
It's more like the lower budget movies, they have to put more thought into the story line because it's low budget, and the story is what would sell it.
Yeah,
but if it's from like a big company, they just gotta throw money everywhere, in my opinion.
Yeah. And not to mention, like, at least with the lower budget, it will help the studios and companies go, hey, you know what? CGI is getting really, really expensive. So we're gonna go with the practical effects.
Yeah, that's always good. Practical effects are always cool. I find them more impressive sometimes than the CGI.
Oh yeah, yeah. What say you, Professor?
Yeah, I've seen more small creative movies. I think the other problem is, though, that we have a glut of movies. There's only so many hours in the day. And that, like, if you want to keep up with Marvel, that's basically a full-time job at the moment.
That's impossible.
Yeah. And very expensive, knowing how much it costs to have a Disney Plus membership.
Yeah, I'm still not over them taking Doctor Who off ABC.
Yeah, they moved it 59
years.
I know, it pissed me off. I was a huge Doctor Who fan up to... what's his name? The old fella.
Peter Capaldi?
Yeah, him. Joey Whittaker, I watched a few of the episodes, but the writing was just terrible, in my opinion. I'm like, what are you doing?
Anyway, we could make an entire podcast about Doctor Who, but that's not the point we're on tonight.
All right, anyways, I think it's eye-opening to see the movie industry and peer into this veil, per se. Anyways, let's move on to our shout outs. So for our first shout out, we've got an interesting question from Lights Camera Rant Podcast, and he asks, who was the best live action Batman? So who wants to take a stab at this?
All right, well, I'm always down. Like, I'm a massive animated series Batman fan and comic book Batman fan, so I'm going to go with George Clooney and Robert Pattinson because they stick the closest to the creed of the Batman character.
They don't kill.
Where everyone else murdered them. Like, no, that's not how it goes, bro.
Oh, come on. It was by accident.
No, not. Kicking dynamite down the dude's pants? That's not an accident.
I mean the Christian Bale Batman, for example, that, like, when Ra's al Ghul died, it was by accident. he He was supposed to jump out. He could have jumped out of the train at any time soon, but no, he decided to stay there and die. All right, what about you, Professor? What's your take? Who's your best live action Batman?
I'm gonna go with the one who has the one from the 60s who basically comedy movies.
You mean Adam?
Ah, yes.
You mean Adam?
Yeah,
West?
Adam West.
Adam West. Yeah.
Because Adam nothing beats running around with a bomb trying to work out where to throw it.
That was a good TV series, actually. It was fun.
Oh, yeah. I was going to say, BPM, when you said George Clooney Batman, I was like, so did you really like the Bat Nipples costume?
No, the costume design was terrible.
Everybody likes bat nipples.
Well, except, was it Kylie Minogue who was playing the psychologist? I think she was into it.
What was the what was with the George Clooney Batman? Oh yeah, my personal favorite, the Bat Credit Card. Oh Jesus.
Good times.
My favorite Batman, and you guys might hate me for this. I'm gonna go with the Christian Bale Batman.
What draws you to him as Batman?
It was the whole, like, the journey. The journey drew me to it, like how he, how the whole journey of seeing, like, Christian Bale being this, not like, from a teenager to a man, like how he grew, and you see the whole process from start to finish, essentially. Like how he got the Batman suit, how he thought of Batman. It wasn't just like a one shot inspiration kind of thing. It was like, okay, I've trained and became a weapon and blah blah blah. So I like the whole journey.
Yeah, I can agree with that.
Yeah,
Like always, having a journey movie is always a good movie. Because you sort of follow through the characters.
Yeah, but then if there was another one I would think of, it'd be Tim Burton Batman, because it's Tim Burton Batman. And we all know how crazy was that costume back in the day.
Yeah.
But Tim Burton Batman has the best Batmobile, I reckon. Moving along, on the January 29, 2024, the 65th anniversary of Sleeping Beauty. Sleeping Beauty is the 1959 American animated music fantasy film produced by Walt Disney, released by Buena Vista Distribution, based on Charles Perrault. It's a 1697 fairy tale. The production was supervised by Clyde Jurani and was directed by Wolfgang Reitman, Eric Larson, and Les Clark. It began developing in 1950. The film nearly took a decade and $6 million to produce and was Disney's most expensive animated feature at the time. The film was a box office bomb in its initial release, grossing $5.3 million and losing $900,000 for the distributor, and many employees from the animation studio became layoffs. Sleeping Beauty's re-releases have become successful. However, it's become one of Disney's most artistically acclaimed features. The film was nominated for the Academy Award for Best Scoring on a Musical Picture at the 32nd Academy Awards. Here are some interesting facts. Second only to Dumbo, this Disney title character only spoke about 18 lines of actual dialogue throughout the entire film, in which she only appeared for 18 minutes, and which is actually about three fairies who protect her, not about Sleeping Beauty herself. This was the last fairy tale produced by the studio until The Little Mermaid in 1989, 30 years later.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's some interesting facts right there.
Yeah, it is.
For a while we've been thinking about doing this, but for today we're going to be doing the messed up moments in nerddom number one.
What the heck is that?
So this is anything messed up in nerddom, it'll be in this category. So
okie dokes.
So this messed up moment is called the Mars Climate Orbiter. So this was formerly known as the Mars Surveyor 1988 Orbiter, which was the robotic space probe launched by NASA on December 11, 1998 to study the Martian climate, Martian atmosphere, and surface changes to act as the communications relay in the Mars Surveyor 98 program for the Mars Polar Lander. So its primary science objectives were to determine distribution of water on Mars, monitor daily weather patterns, record changes in the Martian surface, determine temperature profiles, monitor the water vapor and dust content, and look for evidence of past climate change. The Mars Climate Orbiter launched in December 11, 1998 by NASA from Space Launch Complex 17A at Cape Canaveral in Florida. So it began its planned orbital insertion maneuver in September 23, 1999. And then it went out of radio contact when the spacecraft passed behind Mars 49 seconds earlier than expected, and communication was never established. Due to the complications arising from human error, the spacecraft encountered Mars at a lower than anticipated altitude and was either destroyed in the atmosphere or re-entered before leaving the Mars atmosphere. According to Mars Reconnaissance Orbiter, it has completed the intended objectives for this mission. Here is the messed up part. When they did the investigations, it was revealed that the primary cause of this was one of the piece of ground software supplied by Lockheed Martin produced results in a U.S. customary unit contrary to SI units, which was... And while supplied by NASA, expected to be SI units in accordance with SIS. So the software that calculated the total impulse produced by thrusters resulted in pound force seconds instead of Newton seconds.
Yep, that's stuff up.
Yep, that's pretty bad.
Can you imagine telling that to the board committee? Oh, we had a technical glitch, guys. We didn't notice this until later on after the launch.
Yeah, I would not want to be the person responsible for that.
Nope, I wouldn't be either. And according to NASA, the cost of the mission was $125 million, which is $551.45 million in 2022. Total for the orbiter and lander costed $325.05 million in 2022. For the spacecraft development, $154.36 million for the launching it, and $72 million for the mission operations. That's a lot of money.
It is.
Mm-hmm. And I want to add in a late shout out, by the way. I don't know whether you guys must have heard about it, but Carl Weathers, the actor famous for playing as Apollo Creed in the Rocky movies, he was also famous for playing as Dylan in the Predator movie, and he was also famous for playing in the Mandalorian movie as well. Mandalorian series, I mean. Sorry. He was also famous for playing as Combat Carl in the Toy Story movies, and also playing as Omnitraxus Prime in Star vs. the Forces of Evil.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So yeah, he passed away this today.
That's unfortunate.
Yeah. You were going to say something, BPM, before?
No.
Okay.
No. It's unfortunate. I was thinking, I haven't watched the Man vs. Universe type show, but I heard it's very good.
Yeah, yeah. He's famous for, by the way, Carl is famous for the You know the meme where two guys are holding their hands in an arm wrestling formation?
Yeah.
He's famous for that.
Ah, okay.
Yeah, it's pretty sad.
It is sad, yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
All the good people dying, you know? But then we can go back to the brain transplant, bring him back.
Let's not go there.
Bring back Chester Penley, I'm fine with that.
Yep.
Bring back Linkin Park.
All right, anyways, on to our wacky movie. On the 31st of January, 1908, Excursion dans la Luna, a.k.a. Excursion to the Moon, premiered in France. This was its first theatrical exhibition. It was a 7-minute short film that was written and directed by Segundo de Chamon. And this was the summary. Proving adept at every possible camera trick, Segundo de Chamon was brought by Charles Pathé to a studio at Vincennes near Paris to make trick films in imitation of Jules Verne, such as this one, inspired by a trip to the moon in 1902. The film follows Millet's scenario closely and includes many of its features with variations. For example, the Selenites are not vulnerable to umbrellas, but rather appear and disappear at will. The capsule lands inside the man on the moon's open mouth rather than hitting its eye. And the Selenite who returns to Earth is a dancing moon maiden who's betrothed at the end of the film to one of the astronomers. This film was occasionally been misidentified by a work of Millet's. Of the film's 180 meters, 72 was colorized by Pathé's stencil process. This film, unfortunately, is an unauthorized remake and almost shot-by-shot copy of George Miller's 1902 film, A Trip to the Moon. Now, here's a funny reference for you. And I only noticed this after I read this. I told this to the professor. So there's that line I said about the whole the man in the moon hitting man in the moon open mouth rather than hitting its eye. I thought of Futurama. There's a scene where they all go to the Moona Park and Bender is drinking, and the moon mascot's like, "Nah, you can't drink in here." And Bender goes, "Bite me," and starts shoving the bottle into the moon mascot's eye. I just went, oh my god, that's a reference.
Yeah. The question is, did they get permission to do a remake of the classic movie?
I don't think they would have.
If it's old enough to go into public records, then I think it should be prom, but I don't know. What's your thoughts on it, Professor?
Yeah, at this point, it should be public domain.
Yeah.
So we could do a remake of the remake.
Okay.
There we go. It's Crater Face. Oh, man. I need to watch Futurama again now.
Bringing back memories.
Mm-hmm.
Nostalgia. Yeah. I can't speak.
Anyways, so you guys going to do anything for the rest of the weekend or?
I'll be doing house chores. Yay.
How are you, Professor?
I'll be editing this episode.
All right. And I will be working and trying to finish off Invincible.
Invincible.
That shows.
Watched it yet. I need to watch it.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Good series. Anyways, that's all we have for this week. Where can they find us, Professor?
I was not prepared for this at all.
Isn't it Instagram, Facebook, TikTok?
No, we don't have TikTok. We're not that crazy yet.
Then it's OnlyFans instead.
they can find us on Facebook, Instagram, Twitter. That's not canada.com.
Don't you mean X?
Oh, yeah. Oh, that's Twitter. Yeah. They can also find us on YouTube as well, where we're going to be putting a lot of couple of content on YouTube. But yeah, that's all we have for this week. Stay happy, stay nerdy. See you next time.
Yes.
See you next week.
And stay hydrated.
As always. And get your AC fixed. Here we go.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.